This is the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, man's fourth visit to the lunar surface. Astronauts David Scott and James Irwin have been on the surface of the moon today some 4¾ hours on their second EVA excursion, traveling by lunar rover to the Apennine Mountains. They are now on their return trip to Falcon, their home on the moon. They plan now to take the full 7 hours on this excursion. For a running account of this second traverse by lunar rover, we take you now to the manned spacecraft center at Houston and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
The astronauts have left the lunar front, the Apennine front, in the rover. They're navigating to the north, back toward the limb. Just heard an oops from Dave Scott as they came over a little mound, apparently, and this springy rover just sort of springs up into the air, only there really isn't any air to spring into there. And they stopped at the Dune Crater, which is the secondary crater cluster.
This time we ought to get the covers up in the cabin, Dave. Get the what? The covers, you know, the full Durham sack. Yeah, I know it.
That's Jim Irwin speaking to Dave
Scott.
Go
around to the right. Yeah, I guess we better.
Hello, Rover, this is Houston.
A call for Mission Control.
Go ahead, Houston, Rover here.
Roger, Dave, be advised that the ALSEP is picking up the rumble of the rover rolling across the plains.
The seismometer is picking up the
sound
of the rover.
Is that right? How about that?
And according to our data, you're heading right for the limb.
Yeah, you can give us a DF on the seismometer.
Roger, stand by for a practice DF steer.
I think we were straighter.
That's a DF.
Yeah, man. Hey, I think this is index, Jim.
They believe they're going by index crater near the limb, and he says you can give us a DF steer on the seismometer. That means a direction-finding steer. That's a pilot's term. By what the seismometer on the experiments package says is their location. Well, that was a joke. It can't quite be done.
Give up on distances and sizes. They were 1.7.
That's probably our bite.
It couldn't be it.
They're 1.7 kilometers away from the limb.
Yeah, that's right.
And they are at Arbite Crater.
Yeah, we might as well just get on over those tracks and we know we're straight.
Two astronauts are sitting in their seats on the rover, making about 10 kilometers an hour, really moving along.
What's that crater at 12:30 to us now? Yeah, the fresh one. It's fresh and it has a very light albedo. That's November. Gotta be November. Yeah, clearly November crater. Yeah, we're heading 360, bearing 340 on a range 1.5.
We copy that.
Point right at November at the time.
November crater is right near the rover.
So,
and it has a
index is over there on the right.
It has a very bright albedo, in other words, bright light reflectivity. They're going by index crater, one of the principal landing marks.
They're going to be seasick.
As they were touching down. Dave says, ooh, this is making me seasick.
Traveling on the Mare.
See that one right there? Yeah. Are we just about?
Joe Allen says, in your fastback automobile traveling on the Mare, that reference. And we have a visual display here of
the seismometer
recording the sound of the rover as it's coming across the surface.
And we're going 12 clicks.
12 kilometers per hour.
And it's a new outdoor record.
New outdoor record. Astronaut Fred Hayes, lunar module pilot on Apollo 13 and backup commander on the next mission to Descartes. Watching that seismometer, that readout display. They're about 1.5 to 2 kilometers away from the ALSEP, and the seismometer is recording the sound of the rover.
You can see the signal strength increasing as they, looks like, as they get closer.
Yes. The Dave came across a little hill and dale effect there, over bumps into craters. He says, I'm getting seasick.
Talk about dusty.
Joe, dusty.
Yeah,
right? And Joe Allen says, yeah, in your fastback
there
on the moon.
I thought it would. No, you know, even if you had rubber tires on here, I think you'd kick up the same amount of dust. Yeah, and just kind of rain. And you sure wouldn't climb that hill like we did.
Irwin doesn't believe that the amount of dust being kicked up by the wheels would change whether they were of wire or of rubber. They just passed what they believe to be Arbyte Crater, and they're going, and the last readout from the navigation unit was 360.
Heading 340.
Yeah, now
Roger,
it's 340.
Roger, copy, Jim. And I'm wondering if you've caught sight of the small crater you saw outbound, which you described as having bedrock in the bottom.
Haven't. Don't think we've come that far yet.
Okay.
Sure either.
They've also mentioned one crater.
Why are you contemplating a stop there?
Negative. Just curious.
Yeah, I see it, Teddy.
We are interested in a nav reading there, an odometer reading, and we're going to measure how far away that is from the limb.
They also mentioned one very bright crater called November, which has what's called a very bright albedo. Bright reflectivity, and easy to spot anytime you're up on a little rise someplace.
Man, sure can. Looks like November has all the blocks too, but I can't see any bedrock. I thought the crater that looked like it had bedrock was off to the east of our track. It is, over here to our 11 o'clock. I mean, no, I'm sorry, you're right. I was thinking of a different one, Jim.
Fred,
November has a raised rim, which is, I think, unique around here.
Raised rim. That's why they that and the light albedo on
a
raised
kind of
rim should be a good landmark. It would stand out quite well. Fred, the performance of the rover is good news for you fellows training for Apollo 16, isn't it? Now that they've got it really working right.
Yes, it looks like for sure there won't be any major changes to worry about for ours and the rover for 17.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it, but I don't know whether there was any bedrock.
That's Jim Irwin.
We'll see when we get there. Yeah.
He's talking. I think we have. Sounds like he's going to go sample November. There was an instruction also to the from the Earth to drop Jim Irwin off at the limb, and for Dave to proceed. Oh. Several meters to the west, maybe 100 meters to the west, in the limb, with the limb facing the west. Apparently, they want the sun overnight during this next rest period. I had the rover. Thanks, Fred. I did it again. I've been pretty good today.
Yes, I noticed. You notice the signal now is getting quite the span of the trace that the seismometer. Is producing, it's growing quite large.
There are frags on the side. It's got a light albedo. It's relatively fresh. I think this is the one, isn't it? Well, we'll give it to him anyway. 352 for 0.7.
Roger, copy. Thank you.
Are they stopped?
Yes, okay. Just long enough to give them a reading, nav reading for this crater that we're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Dave and Jim, a
they
comment
can
about your
it.
Equipment offload.
Comments here.
The offloading should go exactly as if it were at the end of EVA-1 with regard to transferring core tubes and so forth. Only the collection bag numbers will be different, and we'll try to talk you through that.
Boy, that seismometer is almost hitting the peg of the scale there.
If you had a calibration, I think you could probably tell distance away by looking at the seismometer signal.
Dave Scott facetiously asked for a DF steer off the seismometer a minute ago, a direction finding steer. It's not quite possible. Jim Irwin describing more lunar features.
Okay, Jim, give us another
odometer reading. No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, whenever you pick it up.
See it on the way back.
Okay, no problem.
I think they've switched the scale on the seismometer.
Dave just gave you the coordinates on.
Roger.
I think Mission Control has switched the sensitivity on the seismometer chart now.
Where?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the signal was getting too large.
Oh, blast.
The rover getting up to 12 kilometers per hour speed. That's just about as fast as they want to run it. And Dave Scott facetiously a moment ago said, hey, I'm getting seasick on this thing, going over ridges and into little valleys.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the best position for thermal.
Talking about the best position for some sort of...
I'm looking at the lem antennas. So, oh, yeah, the radar antenna's pointing straight up.
He's looking at the lem.
Yes, it is. That's the right side.
They're discussing whether the equipment on the lem is in the best position for its thermal soak before liftoff.
Thoroughfare. It looks like a freeway. Yeah. Okay, we'll take this fork here.
They found the tracks of the lem, of the rover. They're back crossing their own tracks now.
And, Dave, as you know, the only thing we have to worry about, especially with regard to kick and dirt, the solar wind composition experiment and the LR cubed, which is pretty far away.
Okay. We'll be careful.
And we'll mark when you stop.
Don't want to kick any dust.
All right, we're almost there.
Don't want to kick any dust into the laser reflector or the solar wind experiment.
Oh, sweet home.
The window shade device.
Yeah, a dust coating on either of those could greatly influence the operation and the data return.
Hey, Jim, I'm going to drop you off right here.
Says we're here.
Okay, Joe, run through what you want to do now.
Dave Scott asking for further instructions from us.
Okay,
Joe
the
Allen.
First thing, I guess, is to offload the gear as if you are out at the ALSEP site with regard to transferring cores, et cetera.
That's another...
and we mark you stopped.
Almost a ceremony, isn't it, Fred?
Yes.
Yeah,
very careful taking
too.
Care of the stuff.
Okay.
Not sure he has that list handy either on his checklist, since this is kind of...
And Jim, standing by for your LRV readouts if you're still there.
Backtracking.
Yeah, I am, Joe. I'm reading 004, 018, 12.5, 002, 9-1, 9-8, 9-2, 9-8, and motor temps are low.
Roger, thank you.
So after all that driving, the rover's range indicator on the navigation system only ended up 0.2 kilometers. In error.
That's what the 002 is, huh?
Yes, I think that's the scaling on that. I'll check it. It's either 0.2 or 200.
Jim, are you climbing off the rover now?
Okay. Yeah, we're climbing off.
They drove 12.5 kilometers.
Yeah, question now, Joe. What you say? You want us to configure now like we would at the ALSEP site?
Dave, basically, you just want to unload the collection bags that you're carrying. We want to wind up with collection bag number 2 on the hand tool carrier and number 3 under Jim's seat. In addition to that, we want number 5 on the hand tool carrier.
This broadcast from the Voice of America. You're listening to Dave Scott and Jim Irwin on the surface of the moon.
2-5 on hand tool carrier, okay.
Roger, and 2's under Jim's seat right now. We want to trade that out for number 3 going under the seat.
Okay, Fred, as I mentioned a moment ago, this is almost a ceremony, is this very careful accounting of where everything is. Help us reiterate why this is so important.
Well, it's important both here as well as in the vehicle itself, just because of the... large number of items you have to contend with that unless you had, well, as you know, anybody in the audience knows, even around the house, you occasionally misplace something and can't find it, as familiar as you are with your own home.
And on the moon, you can't go back and get it.
That's right, and you just can't afford to miss something.
Operate I've manually advanced it. It just won't pick over.
Okay, we copy that. Jim, put on mag kilo kilo on that camera, please.
Changing magazines on...
I was wondering, is Dave going to need his camera out there?
No, why'd you take mine? Mine happens to have kilo on it.
Yeah.
Here.
Oh, that's an outstanding idea.
That goes, but I got two on it.
They're doing a little change out of
okay,
their echo blade.
See, this is EVA 3 back here.
Those are the 70 millimeter.
Roger, bag number two should be under that seat as well.
The still cameras.
Okay, well, we know it. Let's see, you want two and five on a hand tool carrier, and the rest under the seat. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Let's see, one of those Hasselblads has a 70 millimeter lens on it, if I recall correctly, and the other about a 200. I'm not sure.
Flip them back on the hand tool carrier. We'll need them later at the LSEP site.
For the sampling, both have 70 millimeter lenses. At one point there, for the long range shots, Dave was using a 500 millimeter lens to shoot across the rail to the opposite wall, to shoot the big boulder up the Apennine front, and he also, I think, shot a picture of the limb, he said, from their high vantage point with the 500 millimeter. That's about 8 power, whereas your 70 millimeters, essentially 1 power.
Mm-hmm.
The unused core tubes. Joe, speak up now if there's anything else you want to put in bag 5.
They've tried to allocate different bags for different parts of the excursion.
Yes, there's no sense putting bag 5 on the hand tool carrier, Joe, because it's just about full. Why don't we put it on the Mesa or the SRC or something?
Sample return container, the Mesa, the equipment storage area on the side of the lens.
Dave, when you take your camera off, just leave it on my seat.
Dave, the only problem is if we're able to get the deep samples using the drill stems, we'd like them in the SRC. I guess we'll leave it up to you, your choice. We maybe better just to take bag 5 over there right now and forego that little nicety.
Well, now, Joe, you didn't... Just a minute, Jim. Just a minute. Now, Joe, you didn't say anything about getting deep cores. That's why... Here, let's take 3 and put it over there. Keep it there. Let me take 2 back, because now that I know that they want to try and get the deep cores, we do need bag 2. Yeah, that's the first time anybody's saying anything about that.
Dave's getting organized.
That's bag 5, Dave. I mean 5. Well, Dave, why not leave 5 there? Okay. If you get the cores, bring them back, and we'll put it in there. I just won't vote in the SRC.
I think
hold the SRC open. Yeah, that's right.
I think they're getting organized.
Okay.
Sounds good, Jimmy.
There's an awful lot of gear on there, right?
I'm going to leave you my camera right here.
The ESP didn't work that time either, and I guess Houston was thinking what they wanted to do, but neglected to fill Dave and Jim in on there briefly on that one item, which always causes a little extra conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Get that, Joe, my camera 8-9.
Got it, Dave, thank you.
It's giving a frame count. He's taken 89 pictures on that camera.
Boy.
Thanks, Jim.
Can't wait to see those still pictures, those very high definition. On the film, when it gets back to Earth, the definition is fantastic.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I've been out 5 hours.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
5 hours into the EVA. They still have an hour and a half or so of work which may be accomplished within the safe margins of those oxygen and cooling backpacks.
For the information of the audience, the camera magazines, the color ones, contain 170 still pictures. For black and white, about 190 pictures per magazine, and they've each probably almost gone through 2 magazines in the course of this EVA.
Boy, that's a lot of pictures.
Which is why you have to be very careful about keeping track of pictures and samples and where you are, because if you don't, it's a real mess to start out after the fact.
Yeah, in the during the first lunar landing, Apollo 11, one of the film magazines was inadvertently left on the surface. We have more pictures of Buzz Aldrin on the surface of the moon moving about, which were taken by Neil Armstrong's camera, than we have of Neil. I think that magazine was one that happened to be, that was left, happened to be in Buzz Aldrin's camera.
No, I don't think that was 11 where we had a film canister left. The reason there is we only had one camera in 11 and Neil Ward.
Ah, okay.
We had a spare that was left in the door of the limb in case that one broke, they would go get. But they were operating with only one camera.
Was it 12? One of them left it. Apollo 12?
I really don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't leave any magazines on 13, though.
No. They all came home.
Mag 7 stays there, Dave. Leave it there.
Hey,
is it under the seat? I think it's under the seat, and I think it's the bag for the next EVA. Keep it there.
Yeah, 13.
Okay.
The limb went bye-bye.
Okay, it's under the seat. Well, I was going to get those rocks and put them in this bag. Bag 6. Okay.
This is,
Can you get the bag?
Apparently, one of the next things which is to be done, driving the rover off to
my
the...
My arms are a little longer. Maybe I can reach it, Jim. That a boy.
Driving the rover off to the west of the site. They want to leave the back part of the rover exposed to the sun. Apparently, I think possibly this communications unit is the thing they want to protect most. It apparently did become a bit heated. I thought I heard one report to that effect today. Maybe they want to keep it as shadowed as possible, let it cool overnight. I don't think there's too much on the back of the limb other than just the tool carriers, is there, Fred? As far as it would be, have a thermal problem?
No.
Back of the rover, I think.
Yes, the only thing on the rover you got to worry about is that communications relay unit and the television.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the batteries with respect to having their reflective mirrors exposed for heat dissipation. But other than that, the rest of the electronics, I don't think there's any worry about.
The descent engine and solar wind composition pictures, and then I'll be back at you with the next job. And Dave, standing by for when you're ready, and I'll talk about your task coming up here.
An instruction to get some pictures of that descent engine, which the bell of which was crimped a bit on landing. Dave mentioned that the back leg of the limb came down in the small crater, and the ridge of it came up and sort of bent the edge of the engine bell of the descent engine. Instructions to get some pictures of that to bring back.
On the Mesa, I have bags 5, 6, 3, 5, and 6.
Roger, copy, Jim. We'll get them later.
Jim reporting which bags he's putting on the Mesa, the equipment stowage assembly.
And Joe, I'm on a rover and ready to go.
Okay, Dave. We want you to park east of the ALSEP, heading towards the west, and as far east as is comfortable for you, once again with the dust problem in mind. And we want you to clean the TV camera and LCRU before you leave the rover.
Okay, park east, heading west, and I'll just get it fairly close to the central station and avoid the dust. How does that sound?
Roger, just don't drive too far west. Keep it east, if you could, please.
Sounds like they may command the camera again.
Yes.
Okay. Incidentally, at the rover, our bearing was 018 and range 0.2. That's pretty good for a trip like that.
Ain't it, though?
Point two kilometers.
0.2 kilometers was the total error in the system.
And Dave, as you climb off there and get the TV set and are ready, I'll talk to you about the next drilling job.
Let's explain that. In other words, in their traverse, some 12 and a half kilometers to the Apennine front and back, the onboard navigational unit error was only 200 meters in bringing them back to the lunar module.
That's right. If it worked perfectly, the reading when they arrived back at the limb would be zero,
mm-hmm.
and they read 0.2.
Now, this is the gyroscopic inertial guidance system built into the rover.
Which the gyroscope gives you direction, and geared to the moving wheels is an odometer, much like on an ordinary automobile here on Earth that gives you distance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see where he's going to park it.
Holes now. We do want you to to be particularly aware of the side, which has had its dust cover pulled off of it, too, so it'll be particularly sensitive to dust. And when you're ready, once again, I've got words on how this drill should work.
Okay, first, you want me to dust off your TV, is that right?
Yes, sir, please.
Another drilling.
And the LCRU.
You broke up, Joe.
Roger, Dave, dust off the TV and the LCRU, please.
Roger, TV, I understand that, but do you want the TV lens? Because we have a mirror we can dust off, and we also have a lens we can dust off.
Yes, sir, both the camera and the lens, please.
We saw the camera lens being dusted off earlier today. Over the after yesterday's excursion, the just enough of a film of dust built up on the front of that lens to create a halo effect anytime the camera is pointed anywhere near the direction of the sun. And once Jim Irwin dusted it off earlier here today, it really improved the picture. So there's going to be just a little dust to collect there and on the heat reflective covering on both the camera and the communications unit.
Yes, that's a problem. Probably more so for the television than their Hasselblad cameras.
Why wouldn't, well, dust would get on the lenses of the Hasselblads too, certainly, wouldn't it? The way they're kicking it up themselves.
Well, the quality of the picture, for the purposes at least of telling general rock shape and which rock they picked up, the requirement is not as high as for somebody watching a TV picture. The interest is just a different form.
Okay, Dave, we're standing by for TV. Turn on.
Astronauts Dave Sky and Jeb Irwin have spent 5 hours and 8 minutes taking the lunar rover down to the Apennine front, sampling some unusual rocks and other formations around in the lunar surface there. As Dave Scott says, it appears we got what we came for. They have now driven back up to the LEM, and the rover has functioned perfectly today, all four wheels working just as advertised. And they stopped again at Dune Crater, this secondary crater cluster between the mountain front and the landing site, sampled that. They're now back beside the LEM. Jim Irwin is arranging much of the sample material for packaging back on board the lunar module, and Dave Scott is off to the west, positioning the rover for more activities. Core tube, apparently another deep drill is to be done. Thanks very much to astronaut Fred Hayes for his comments and for his keeping me in line on these very precise facts on the equipment and the spacecraft systems. And we'll report more to you on regular Voice of America programs from here at the Manned Spacecraft Center. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.
You've been listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, now 147 hours, 25 minutes into the mission. Astronauts Scott and Irwin, as you heard, have returned to the vicinity of the lunar module Falcon after the journey by lunar rover to the foot of the Apennine Mountains. The astronauts will be going back into the lunar module Falcon for a long rest period in a little less than 2 hours. Our thanks to astronaut Fred Hayes and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. Stay tuned to the Voice of America for periodic live reports on the progress of the Apollo 15 mission. This is Les Higby at the Apollo News Center. This program has come to you from the United States of America.